Welcome to the Fundraising Freedom Podcast with Mary Valone. I'm your host, Mary Valone, and this is the place where aspiring six and seven-figure fundraisers come to be encouraged, empowered, and educated on how to raise more funds and have more freedom. So today we're in episode 103, and I have a very special guest today. I'm very honored to have Bridget Myers, the Chief Development Officer for Foster Adopt Connect in Kansas City, Missouri, as our guest today. And Bridget is my former supervisor, and she is the one who hired me for my position at the American Cancer Society. So Bridget has just years and decades of experience, not only in fundraising, but in executive leadership. And so today's episode is going to be really special for me, and I'm thrilled to be able to invite you guys to be a part of it as well. So please join me in welcoming today's guest, Bridget Myers.
I really appreciate this opportunity to talk to you and your audience.
It is such a joy for me to be able to introduce you to the listeners of Fundraising Freedom Podcast, because it all started with Bridget Myers. So I don't think I would have had the same fundraising experience had Bridget not come into my life. And so I'm really honored to have Bridget on the show today. And so I want to have Bridget go ahead and just have you share a little bit about yourself and the work that you're doing now. And then we'll dig in a little bit more about the work that we've done together over the course of the last several years.
As Mary said, my name is Bridget Myers. I am currently the Chief Development Officer for a local nonprofit in the Kansas City community area called Foster Adopt Connect. This organization is 10 years in the making, so they're fairly established, but my background is truly with another national organization, the American Cancer Society. That is where I spent 23 years of my nonprofit career in various leadership roles.
Yay. Well, and I love that you landed at Foster Adopt, because it's such an incredible cause. So like right now in the role that you're working in, what specifically are you responsible for as far as obviously the fundraising, but what kinds of dollars are you responsible for raising?
I am directly responsible for around $5 million. The organization is right at a $7 million organization, and I will explain a little bit about how that plays out. I did want to just briefly tell you that Foster Adopt Connect, so you can get kind of a background of what we project to the community in just a very short version, is that we provide wraparound services for foster children or children coming into the foster care system who have been abused and neglected. But then we also provide wraparound services and personal advocacy for the families who adopt those children or care for them. So that's a mission that almost everyone can wrap themselves around, basically.
Yeah. Absolutely. What an incredible cause. And it's interesting because, you know, going from 23 years at the American Cancer Society, and you were responsible for, I mean, not like $5 million is a lot of money. And I think a lot of people would say, okay, that's a pretty decent budget. But you were responsible prior to this for what kind of numbers were you dealing with when you were at the American Cancer Society?
Well, it varied. When I was just responsible for the Springfield area, it was about the same amount as the regional vice president over four states. It was around 12 to 14 million.
Yeah. So a significant amount of money. I just want everybody to understand what kind of responsibility you've had in the past, because it's a significant amount of money. And so, yeah, raising a couple $100,000 versus raising a couple $1 million or multi-million dollars is definitely a different ball game for sure. So, okay, I want to take people back a little bit, and having you on the show is really special to me, because I actually wrote about Bridget in my book. Her name did not appear in there, but she was actually the one I had to sell my duct tape fundraiser too. So it was a multi month interview process. I feel like I think it took like 3 months before I officially got my invitation to join the American Cancer Society team. But one of the things that I loved so much about you, Bridget, is the fact that you, you were served in the executive director type role. There was different titles, of course, back then. As executive director, I just thought it was interesting how you didn't struggle handing over the reins to your development directors. And that is such a challenge for people to like give ownership to their staff. And I really wanted to hear from you, like, why did you let me run? Like, why did you allow me? I mean, because I was given about a $50,000, I was assigned a $50,000, yeah, budget. And in the end, after our first year with our gala event, we net over $500,000. And I think, Bridget, had you held onto the reins tighter, I would have raised $50,000 and it would not have been a $500,000 fundraiser. So I'm just curious from your perspective, what happened there? What allows you to really hand over the reins to your staff?
Well, I can tell you very distinctly why that happened. And as a nonprofit leader, I would say to every single person I talk to is that you have to remember, as hard as it is, you have to think of this as a business first and a feel-good organization, nonprofit opportunity second. We so tend to lead with our hearts, and because we are people who love the cause we're working for, we want to make a difference in the world. But as a leader, you have to have your business hat on at all times. And as an executive director, number one, I didn't have the time to micromanage Mary. So that brings you to the point of you have to make the right hire first. And Mary mentioned that it took quite a while. I know a lot of people don't have a long time to make a decision, but you really do have to make a great hire. And that's the number one step to getting to being able to raise the dollars without you having to be right in the middle of it from beginning to end. So number one, try your best to make the best hire. But number two, make sure that you utilize those first 90 days. If you sit down, train properly, spend the time up front, set short and long-term goals, you're going to get an idea of whether this person that you've chosen is going to be the right person. And if it's not, cut your losses, say, you're glad to have met them, but move on. I knew in the first 30 days after hiring Mary that we were going to have a successful program and a successful distinguished event with Mary in place, because we immediately met. She was eager to learn. She was eager to be coached. I had a plan set for the right kind of resources to get her up and running. And one of her very first assignments was get out in the community and find that one right person that's going to make a difference in this event. She didn't sit behind her desk and make calls. She got out in the community and immediately started networking. So I knew right then I had the right person. I was able then to coach a little, but direct and delegate for the entire process. And that doesn't mean that I didn't attend meetings. I didn't attend discovery meetings. I did that occasionally, but I had the trust in Mary to know that she was going to do that and then report back to me. That's another key. You can't let them run and not know what they're doing. We had regular one-on-one meetings, and that was what I needed to make sure that we were reaching all of our milestones on her timeline and doing the things she needed. We also had the great privilege and opportunity to have a couple of days with a gentleman within the American Cancer Society that had previously supervised many large special events. We actually met with him. And another key is that Mary completed every step that John asked her to do to have a successful event. So that's really the success of the special event being budgeted at $50,000 and ended up at $500,000 its first year out.
Yeah, it was a crazy journey. I remember, this was 12 years ago. And yeah. I remember it so clearly because I was so eager to learn, and having a supervisor like you, you know, that was just like gave me the freedom to go and run, and then gave me the resources to make sure that I was successful along the way. And so I spoke about, you know, I wrote about John too in my book, Fundraising Freedom. And the thing about John was that John was he had a specialized skill set in fundraising. And this is one of those things that I felt like we were so very privileged, you know, with the American Cancer Study, that there was a person on staff like that. And I don't know if you know this or not, but John is actually in that position was what, as soon as I met him, I'm like, oh, I want to be that. I wanted that role. And of course, I told you right away when they were hiring another position, because they split his job in half ultimately. And so I was like, oh, I want that job. But I knew that I needed to get all this experience under my belt so that I could ultimately do what I do today. And so it was just incredible. And I really just want to, you know, publicly just, you know, give you kudos, because I think that there are so many executive directors out there, so many executive directors that are listening, that they really do have a hard time handing over responsibility to their staff. I mean, I spend a lot of time talking at conferences to fundraisers, to development directors, and they just say, I wish my executive director would just let me run. If I could just have a little bit more space. But I also want to ask you, I know this is kind of veering off script a little bit, but I want to find out from you. I mean, you hired a lot of different development directors, a lot of different development staff, and some worked and some didn't. So, mm-hmm. I mean, how did you hold back from, you know, not becoming jaded that it's like, okay, here's somebody that is going to be successful and somebody who's not? How do you handle that?
I think I'm a very optimistic person, and I always want to give everyone as much opportunity as I can. And, you know, in 23 years, you are successful with some and not successful with others. So, you just have to have that mindset in your own management skills that you have to, this is the way you're going to manage. And I just simply follow a lot of gut feelings, but know that I can back those up with different benchmarks and the experience I had in the past to know whether that's a good decision or a bad decision. And I think a lot of people in general just cannot understand the fact that sometimes we do fail. We are human, and that doesn't mean that we want to give up. We compensate in a different way to make it successful. And I think another thing I've always thought about is I've never thought about the end as not being successful. We always start with success in mind, and how do we create that path to get to exactly where we want to.
Yeah, really good. Well, and I felt that way. Like there was such a culture during the season that I walked into that position, and I really felt like I was working for the best organization. I feel like you had created a culture in that environment, in that office, that we were the best. Like, I mean, and it wasn't an arrogance. It was the fact that it was our events were the most successful. Other nonprofits were looking at us. And, yes. You know, when we talked about, you know, serving in leadership, it was really about let's serve in leadership amongst our organization and really be the shining stars amongst the within the organization. So I loved it. It was always such a fun competitive environment, but competitive in a really positive way.
I do think that another important point that I need to make too is that to set up that kind of culture, you do also have to lead by example, and you have to, my feeling is that I had to share the big picture of the organization with our staff. We can't pigeonhole our staff into, this is just your part of what you're doing, concentrate on that and go out and do your job. You have to understand the significance of the overall picture of your organization and show your staff, your frontline staff, how much you value them in the organization. And they have to understand what your overall budget is. They have to understand the reach that we're trying to make, not just with them, but with everyone. And I know Mary can talk to the fact that we did talk about the big picture of the American Cancer Society always in our group and team meetings.
Yeah. Well, and the vision and having that dream. And I feel like that was always the underlying conversation, is that the dream was that we were going to cure this thing, you know, that we were going to help a whole heck of a lot of people. And that was ultimately the driving reason why we walked into that office every single day. That's where, and I'm sure same thing for where you're at right now, is that every day it's like you show up to work and you've got this vision and this dream that's so much bigger than ourselves. And I remember people often saying, they're like, what if they find a cure for cancer? And I was like, I'll go find another job.
Like, yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's what we want, you know? So, and obviously for you, it's like, how amazing would it be if no child had to be adopted or had to be in foster care, the foster care system? Of course. Done.
Yes.
Go find me a new job.
Absolutely. Yes. You can walk around with a smile on your face every day if that happens. So yes,
absolutely.
You have to work towards the mission every day.
Yes. Yeah. And so I love that. So, okay, let's jump into fundraising. So I love that you have this huge executive director, this, management background, and now you're back in the weeds, fundraising chief, development officer. And so based on your experience just in the fundraising space, what are you seeing that's working really well? What are you seeing that people are doing really well in the fundraising space?
I hope this is probably something that you've already heard, but I have to just tell you from my experience, the number one thing in what works, still works well in fundraising, is relationships, relationships, relationships. And if you don't have those to build on, to establish and build on, you're never going to get to what you want your stretch goals to be. And we always have to have stretch goals in the process of fundraising. So I would definitely say number one is relationships. You also have to remember that you are meeting with people to find out as much about them as to talk about ourselves, because as a nonprofit organization, we're so anxious to sell ourselves to them that we don't always give our prospective donors the time to really share about them and what their needs are, what their brand stands for, what are they really interested in, what kind of mission they're interested in advancing and supporting. So I think Mary could expand a little bit on that, because we always talked about the fact that sometimes we really forget to involve our prospective donors in the conversation. We just want to do all the talking, and you have to sit back and listen. And then absolutely taking the information that you got, create a plan around that particular corporation or individual. One size does not fit all. Follow up and follow through. If you create a great plan and sit behind the desk and make phone calls and write emails, you're never going to get where you want to be. So that's really what is working well. It's still the same process, but some things just work. And in a world of social media, email, voicemails, you can really get yourself caught up in not getting out and doing those face-to-face and creating those or developing those relationships. And then you have a gauge when you know more about them, what they're interested in, what their giving capacity is, what their interest is in getting involved with you, and then set them up for a nonprofit path or a philanthropic path to additional giving, because we always use the formula that if you get them involved in an event, then you have the opportunity to get them involved in your programs, maybe volunteering in other areas. They get more interested in your organization, or they get their employees interested. And then that creates another layer of giving. And then they get interested in maybe adding you to their planned giving. There's such a clear-cut pyramid to your frontline involvement, all the way up to what you want to do to get the most out of every relationship that you have. And, you know, everybody has a different capacity and level of giving, but you have to appreciate every level of giving that a person can provide to you.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the things that I really learned from you, is, you know, really taking people on a journey and taking them through the process, whether it's a, you know, 10-year-old kid, or it's a 80-plus-year-old, you know, retired planned giving gift. You know, that it's like you really want to make sure that no matter what age they are, where they land in your, you know, in the giving plan, is that there's a place for them somewhere.
Yeah.
And right. I think that we miss out on that so often. We're like, oh, we only want people between this age, and that's what we want. And so we're going to target them in this way. It's like we really have to expand our ability to connect with people.
Exactly.
Yeah. It just is, you know, in the world that we work in, it's kind of like in real estate, location, location, location. It's like, yeah. And in fundraising, relationship, relationship, relationship. So the more connections that we can make, the better. And I love that you say, you know, get out from behind the desk, because building face to face and actually getting in front of somebody is a game changer, to just let them talk and let them share about their heart for why they want to give their money away. Like, what do they want to be a part of, and how can you find the right fit for them? So on the opposite side of
exactly.
On the opposite side of this question, what are you seeing that people are doing pretty poorly? Like, what is the thing that's happening that you're like, oh my goodness, if I could just, you know, fix this? This is the thing that people are doing so frequently that they should not be doing.
The first thing that comes to mind, and especially for larger events and larger organizations, is not taking calculated risk. Every large organization, if you aren't constantly reevaluating where you're at, not settling for status quo, you are never going to take that next step, go to that next level with your organization. And I fully believe that from experience, because having been involved in a special event that was a $1 billion event nationwide, was one of the most successful events to ever hit any organization. It was absolutely wonderful while it lasted.
Yeah.
But we made the course decision as a national organization to not realize that the world was changing. and that we had to do things a little differently to keep the people involved that had been involved for many, many years satisfied and continuing to support us, because we all know, at least people that have been in the nonprofit business for a while, is it's great to go out and you always want to seek new donors, but make donors that you already have in your book of business happy, satisfied, and continuing to support you will always be your larger gift. So you have to listen to your constituents, listen to your donors, make changes that are good for them and you too. You can't just change for the sake of change, or you can't choose change that you can't afford. But you can recognize some changes that you can do that will keep you going and build upon what you already have. I think that's the biggest thing that I see that nonprofits don't do. We have to keep up with that. Sometimes we have to use smaller events as friend events, just to, that they're not always going to be the largest fundraiser you have, but they create low-hanging fruit. And I know that's an old phrase as well, but I guarantee you, if you look back and always try to reach out to the closest constituent group or base that you have, or connections from someone to someone else, you're always going to be able to grow your organization again. And I think we just tend as humans to not always continue to put our face out in the community. And that was one of the best things, again, as a staff person that Mary did. You might not always want to do it. You might get tired of doing it, but again, I think one of the things that nonprofits aren't doing is continuing to consistently get yourself out there and remind people of who you are and really build a marketing strategy around your organization that includes face-to-face, your social media, and all the other things that you utilize.
Yeah, you're so spot on that it's like you have to take those calculated risks and be willing to try new things and just use those as great introductory ways to engage people into your cause. One thing that I see often is that people use their fundraising events as the fundraiser instead of the tool to get to know people and build relationships and then turn those into larger contributions. And that's where I think we get lost in the event planning process, where we just put on good parties. When you look at a $5 million budget that you have, is that ultimately what you're looking towards doing, is getting those larger gifts off of some of these smaller ones? Or where are you spending the majority of your time to get those larger contributions?
For me, well, I'll give you a perfect example, going back to just what you said about taking advantage of networking opportunities and not just going to the event, but really working the event. As the brand new chief of this organization, which I just celebrated my 1-year anniversary. Yes, I started in January. Our annual gala type event, it was in September. We, of course, did all the things we were supposed to do as far as my staff person planning the event, taking care of all the logistics. I was involved with an executive committee from the board that was interested in really helping with development. So that's where I really needed to be involved. So I was always at those meetings just to, you know, listen, find out any other opportunities we might be able to pursue through all of them, because they are very influential in the community. But the night of the event, I made it a point to visit every single table, introduce myself, thank them for being there, asked them if they had a business card that they wanted to share. I had my cards that I put on the tables. It was just a way of saying, I really appreciate you being here. And I don't know how many calls we got after the event or emails thanking us, number one, for a great event that they really enjoyed being introduced, or that I was there to introduce them, to say hi. So that, I think, was the most important part of that event that I could contribute. It wasn't making sure that all the board members were happy, because all the board members knew me. They had 9 months to get to know me. I was really there to look for potential new contacts that then we can go back and research and create a warm lead as opposed to cold calling, because nobody really likes to do that. Sometimes it's necessary, but if you have a warm lead, that's always easier and it leads to a larger gift. We just started our planning for 2019, and we have 8 new companies to look at for potential new corporate sponsorship. And we actually had a company by the name of Delta Dental who contacted us in December and said, we really love the gala and the things that you changed, because, of course, as a new person, I changed a lot of the things that they were doing with the gala, added new elements, some fun things to do during the cocktail hour, just those little things that really didn't take a lot of money, but it took planning and just to make it a great experience for the people that were coming. So because of that, they called us and they want to be our cocktail hour sponsor. We don't even have a cocktail hour sponsorship, but I can guarantee you we're doing the final touches on that cocktail sponsorship based on what they want to do. And my special event person, who is used to asking for whatever she thought we could get, I said, you can never, and this was another lesson that we learned through John, is you can never ask for more, but you could start out with what is truly going to give you a good profit on that particular sponsorship and work your way down. So I had her actually analyze how much it was going to cost us to provide the extra things they wanted to, and added 20% on to that. So that's what we're going to present to them. And I absolutely believe they're going to accept it. So that's a brand new sponsor that perhaps we would never had we not changed things up a little to make it a really great experience for our guests.
How cool. And the fact that you paid attention, you're following up, because I think that this is the problem that sometimes people have, is that even when somebody like, you know, Delta Dental that says, hey, we want to do more, it's up to you now to make sure that you deliver on what it is. You heard what they wanted, you listened to what they had to say, and now you're delivering so that it's a good fit. And I've seen where people just drop the ball right there, where it's like, oh yeah, they reached out to us and they had a good time. And it's like, this is where the job starts, people. Like this is where we go to work and we go get some extra funds. So that's awesome. What a great, and just like you said, just such a small tweak, something that didn't cost you very much, but look at now it's probably going to raise you thousands, right?
Yes, yes.
Thousands.
Well, we're expecting that to be a 25,000 new gift for the gala this year.
There you go. $25,000.
So that, I mean, if you're looking to raise $100,000, that is a very good potential that you're going to get 25% of it right there. And the other thing to remember is when someone asks for something unique like that, don't try to pigeonhole them into, and this is something else that I'm working on, but you have to also realize you can't change everything at one time. You have to step place things that you know are going to be successful. Foster.connect has always used gold sponsorship, silver, bronze, you know, just kind of the generic sponsor levels. Well, instead of trying to say, well, we don't really have a cocktail sponsor, but we can utilize you as a bronze level sponsor or a silver level sponsor, and we can just maybe add something about sponsoring the cocktail event. No, we are going to create that sponsorship for them specifically.
Yeah.
So don't think you can't. Yes, you can't create that, or you try to pigeonhole them into something that's not what was their suggestion.
Right. And I think it's interesting because it's like, who cares about the gold, silver, bronze? Like,
right.
You know, I mean, who even came up with that in the first place? And,
right.
You know, so if it works to make those changes, absolutely. But it's funny how people get fixated on, well, this is the way it's always been. And it's like, well, it's a new day. We're going to change it and in a positive way that's going to really engage new people in. So, all right. Well, we are coming to a close on our conversation, and I want to ask you, so this is the Fundraising Freedom podcast, and I want to just hear from you. What do you feel like freedom means to you in your fundraising? Like, what does true freedom mean for you as the chief development officer raising $5 million? What does that mean to you?
Freedom means having such a well-oiled machine on your front line that you absolutely have the time to concentrate on the bigger picture, concentrate on the vision of the organization, connect what we're doing in fundraising directly back to the difference we're making in the mission. And again, it always goes back to that more money, more mission, no money, no mission, or no mission, no money. It all evolves around how can you have that freedom to go and aspire to whatever you want to do, because you have the organization to be able to do that. And I just think freedom means doing whatever you want within the financial parameters, of the organization, and just having that ability to take small risks. Freedom means so many things to me. I could go on for another 20 minutes.
You do lead with this, this sense of freedom that it's like, okay, where are the lines? Like, let's go do it. If it's going to raise more money, create greater impact, like, heck yeah, let's go do it. And I think that so many people can learn from this. And I hope that, you know, everybody's listening. Now you know where, like, my fundraising came from now that you've gotten a chance to meet Bridget. But I the optimism, though, of being able to really function in this way, I think is super admirable. I obviously adore you, and I'm so grateful that I got a chance to work under your leadership, because you have taught me so much about how to be a strong leader, but also a female leader. I think that, you know, you run in some tough circles and kind of stand your ground as a female executive director. And you've always led with integrity and honesty, and have never, I know in the world of fundraising, it's really easy to kind of, you know, move the numbers around, make things sound better than they are. And I always felt like you were so honest and truthful. And I think that means a lot, and it helps when you're trying to create this sense of freedom and for your staff and for, you know, the people that work underneath you. So I could go on for days. So, okay. So one parting piece of guidance that you, Bridget Myers, would like to impart on our listeners today. What's you know, a takeaway that you have from our conversation or that you'd like to leave our people with?
Never give up, and no matter what, have that positive personality when you're working with your team. You absolutely have to be a part of the team you're leading. And I would just say, never say never. Something's always possible. You just have to have a great plan and follow through.
Love it. Love it. And if somebody wants to connect, to get connected with you, what's the best way that somebody could find you or reach out to you to maybe hear more about foster.connect or just about you personally?
My email is Bridget, B-R-I-D-G-E-T-T, at fosteradopt.org. I would be happy to take some time to help anyone that is interested.
Awesome. I was going to say, but you're going to have a hard time finding her because she's going to be out having coffee and lunch with somebody, right?
Right. But I'm
not going to be trapped.
I do a lot of emails in the evening. Yeah.
Love it. Well, thank you, Bridget. I appreciate your time and for you being on a guest on today's show. So thank you. We'll be talking soon.
Absolutely. And good luck to everyone. I know you can find a path to success.
Awesome. Thank you.
Would you like to create a killer 6 or 7-figure signature fundraiser where you have long-term sustainability, less stress, and the freedom to focus on what really matters? Well, Fundraising Freedom Academy may be just what you need. I'm Mary Valone, and I created an 18-month training program that gives you the clarity and confidence to launch, grow, and scale your signature fundraiser, including weekly coaching calls, masterclass trainings, and easy-to-edit templates to build your signature fundraiser. This was the exact plan I used to net $500,000 with a first-year event. Apply today for the next Fundraising Freedom Academy class at fundraisingfreedomacademy.com. That's fundraisingfreedomacademy.com.